understanding your materials, mastering your techniques, and organizing a statewide sculpture competition. All in a day's work for today's guest. We continue our conversation with large-scale ceramic figurative artist Lucy Ryan. Good afternoon. I am Stephen DeLuque. You have tuned in to Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program produced at the studios of KCBX listener-supported public radio. KCBX serves the beautiful California Central Coast from Salinas to Ventura. Co-host Krista Hewitt and I travel to Cambria to visit with sculptor Lucy Ryan. Lucy is one of the movers and shakers behind the upcoming California Sculpture Slam to be held at the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art, opening at the end of September. But more about that later. We join Lucy as she describes the process and procedure of building large-scale ceramic pieces.
You say that you have a basic scheme when you're starting one of these figures. So as they're progressing and things are changing, is it just a matter of the conversation that you're having with it?
Yes. First of all, what I do is I make a maquette, rough maquette, but I know what the gesture is supposed to mean. In fact, a lot of times I try to get into the pose myself. And some of the poses that I have, like that one, she's really exaggeratedly leaning forward, and it's not that easy. But I get into the pose, and I spend some time feeling what that feels like in my body. So that tells me the directions to sort of exaggerate and push. And then I do a little maquette. Then I measure the maquette, and I have a scale, a wheel, and I do a drawing of the piece, and I know, for instance, if the piece is 3 inches high and I want to make it 40 inches high, it's so many percent bigger. So then I have a way of drawing points on my sketch that tell me I have to start the shoulder at, 32 inches. This thigh is so many inches off the floor at the knee. So I have a roadmap of where I'm going. I can change that, but the usually, changes that I make, that piece that I'm making now, I decided I need to change one of the arms from what my original intention was. But because I've got it this far along, I can't change it too much. I can't change the shift of the shoulders without rebuilding the piece. So one of my struggles is to come out to maintain the gesture. Now, this is a technical thing. If I have an arm sticking straight out like that and the fingers are touching the table, when it shrinks, the fingers will no longer be touching the table. So I decided I'm tired of struggling with that particular issue, and I'm going to bend her arm and put it on her leg somehow so that she's not trying to touch another place. And that's why I sort of stuck with that piece. But it's a decision I'm making, even though it wasn't my original intention.
And when those struggles come along, what's your basic method to the other side?
I don't have a basic method. I figure out what it is that I, what the problem I've built for myself technically and how I can solve it. I have to maintain the intention of the piece, but I also have to be an engineer. I have to figure out how I can solve it. And that's what happens with all sculptors. And sculptors, as you know, many of them work in multimedia or different materials, and you have to learn every one of those materials. And I don't actually know how some sculptors manage to do that, because it's hard enough for me to just deal with what clay does.
That's one of the things we like to talk about, is mastering your medium. And that's one of the things that the first thing that what I used to tell students was, the first thing you have to do is learn everything you can about the medium that you're using, because otherwise you're not going to be successful at expressing yourself in it.
Well, that's very true. And the only way you learn it about clay is to actually make pieces. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a relationship with the clay. I kind of, not out loud, but I kind of say, will you do this for me? And I seem to be able to get clay to do things that lots of people can't get clay to do, although the other artists work the way I do. Just being able to put an arm out in space and somehow actually have it be firm and stay there and not break off is, I can do that. And I just feel like I know how far I can go, and I push it.
If you're leaving this area for a while, you're traveling, mm-hmm. you're doing whatever, because of the nature of the clay, are you able to leave something partially done, or do you have to pretty much wrap stuff up and then come back to a clean slate?
Well, there's two ways you can work with paper clay. You can let it dry, and then you can wet it and add onto it. But at that point, you have the shrinkage issues. So that at that point, the head might be too big for the body. So I basically wrap it. I try to finish the surface so that it's relatively smooth and clean, because I don't want to be working on hard clay to do the surface. And usually there's a trick of putting a dampened T-shirt on the inside of the hollow piece, because it helps to regulate the moisture. Mm-hmm. And putting a towel or something over the piece and then wrapping it in plastic. I can hold something that way on and off for months. I mean, it actually does take me, well, it usually takes me 3 months to finish 3 or 4 pieces. I work on more than one at a time. I'm not doing that so much now, but that's the ideal, is that I have 3 sculpture stands and a table with a turntable, and that way I can work for so many inches high on a piece, take a break, and then go to another piece, and I can actually work a full day, but it's still going to take 3 months to do those pieces all at once.
So that 3 or 4 inches goes back to saying I have to let that set up.
Yes.
A little bit, and I don't want to just leave and not have anything to do.
Well, there's two.
Or is it in part two that, okay, I've got this one established, but this one over here is starting to ask questions of me again, and I have to go pay attention?
Well, it's about actually this, having the clay be firm enough to build onto without changing or buckling, warping, or something like that. It's also, you know, after doing this for a while, I've decided it's about having fresh eyes when you look at your next piece. If you work on one piece too long, you lose the sense of something. I don't know what you can lose what you're doing. You can get so into one detail that you forget about the whole rest of the piece, or you can go in too far in a direction that the next day you want to tear it off and do something else, and you've then just lost all that work and all that clay, all that material. Not that the clay is very expensive, but you know. So it's about both things.
Yeah, it's a loss of time and energy.
I think that we all have done that.
Yes.
Although painting, I don't know painting, because I really haven't done any painting since I was, you know, in my 20s. But it seems a faster medium. I don't know if it really takes that long to do a painting, or if it's a matter of size. But one of the things that I feel about doing 3D work is you have to maintain a positive relationship with a piece over a much longer period of time than a painter does, although I know some painters put a piece away and then take it out a year later, so maybe you could say it took them a year to make that piece, I don't know. But I know it's hard to maintain the positive energy it takes to do something three-dimensional that takes months to complete.
Lucian Freud was notorious for taking years to finish a painting.
Yes. He'd take one back and change it, wouldn't he?
Mm-hmm. I think the portrait of the queen that the royal family had commissioned him, I think that took him 18 months to paint that. And I think it's 12 by 18 inches or something like that. It's a tiny little thing.
Well, I guess I can't speak for painters.
But I think, I mean, it really just goes back to what the conversations that we have all the time on this program are about, how people approach technical things that make dictations, but the mental ones are absolutely there. And if we try to pretend that they're not, or that they're all just written down on paper, once that idea comes, the whole thing falls in place. Usually that doesn't happen, at least not for a lot of us. So that conversation goes on and on and on, and sometimes you need to set it aside, sometimes you need to stay with it. As you say, there's that, oops, I just took this a little farther than I wanted to. It looked great last night at one, but right now I'm going, what did I do that for?
With painters, it's a much more forgiving medium. I paint in acrylic, so if I screw something up, I can just paint over it. Clay and metal and stone doesn't work that way.
Well, the other thing about clay is that you're going to subject it to fire. I mean, it's going to go through a death by fire, and it really does die and become something else. When it vitrifies, it tightens up. Nothing ever looks as beautiful and velvety as a piece that's going towards leather hard. that's the stage at which, for instance, if I were going to cast a piece in bronze, oh, and I have done some bronze work too, and I've taken the foundry course at Cuesta, and I love the bronze work too. But anyway, if I were going to cast something, I would take it at the stage that piece is in, because that's when it has almost a glow to it, and it's smooth, and you know, the light plays on it, and once you fire it, you have to accept it all over again. You have to buy into it all over again. And until you've fired enough pieces, you know, you don't know what to expect, much less what if it cracks in the kiln, what if there's something in the kiln that disturbs the color or whatever like that. So, you know, all of those surprises go into clay that you have to accept before you begin, or just, you know, it's no good.
Mm-hmm. That learning how over years of doing it, of, as you say, seeing the piece and trying to see it in its final and seeing it today. And I know working with metal, I think I've gotten some ability to go, oh, when I inlay the wood into this cavity here, when I perhaps polish this surface or oxidize this one, I kind of know where it's going to go, but never as much 100% as I might like. And so, you know, I can really identify that. I mean, yes, you can keep making layers of paint, but there's a point at which I'm assuming that it kind of starts to change it. I mean, either one place gets thicker or, I mean, it isn't just a matter of, okay, this is, you know, where I started and everything. And obviously with watercolor, you can't keep doing that forever. Printmaking, you know, once you start to etch that plate, you can etch it more, but you can't really take it back a lot. So, and a lot of people sometimes presume that it's all about learning the technique, that that's all that we do, that somehow the rest of it's just sort of there, which we know isn't the case. But if you haven't got the vocabulary, you can't talk.
Exactly. I think we've said this before. You need to be familiar with your materials, how to handle them, what they're going to do, and you need to not sort of set up yourself for failure by not knowing what your materials are going to do.
If you have just joined us, you are listening to Ears on Art, produced at the studios of listener-supported KCBX Public Radio in San Luis Obispo, California. Guest Lucy Ryan explains her involvement in the upcoming California Sculpture Slam.
You made a reference a little while ago to helping to coordinate the California Slam, which is a juried sculpture exhibit statewide. All three of us happen to be people who have chosen to be quite involved in our community in different, you know, arts organizations in different ways. So I know that that one has been there, but I think you've been quite involved in some other activities as well.
Yes, I was the gallery director for Cambria Center for the Arts for about 18 months, meaning that I mounted an art show every single month during that time, except for the month they did the children's art show. I actually got involved with the Central Coast Sculptors Group before I ever even got involved with Cambria Center for the Arts. I was new to the area, and I was new to being a full-time artist, and I felt that I needed to meet the people and have the support of a group of people who know what they're doing. And also, I have this kind of one rule, which is if you want to be an artist, most of your friends need to be artists. I mean, of course, you have your family, and you're somebody you go to the opera with, but your basic group of friends need to hold you accountable. That's been very valuable to me. Well, if somebody doesn't ask me, have I started a new piece? It's very supportive to have people who are interested in what you're doing, who want to come and see what you're doing. I have one friend who will come down, and we even did some pieces together. He made parts of them. I made parts of them. That gave us an idea for a show actually in San Luis Obispo for our group, where one person started a piece and handed it off to another person, and that person finished it, and we did it both ways. That's expanding your vision of what you can do, what other people can do, what you may dabble with. I've been doing some little abstract things that are sort of war machines, but they're kind of threatening machines. I've had a lot of discussion with artists about the combination of something frightening like bullets or spikes or knives or barbed wire in conjunction with something soft and vulnerable like a human form or an animal form. I wouldn't have those discussions with myself, put it that way. It is as much for me as out of a sense of the community I've worked all my life, and I think it's valuable to do something for other artists. If I have the time to organize a show that they can put their work in, then that's something I want to do.
I certainly have had a lot of that same experience of just recognizing that if I'm immersed, as you say, in that cultural part of my community that I can more directly identify with, it just keeps opening doors, and you never quite know what you might explore next. For some time, you know, back in the early days of the Art Center, they'd be bringing in people to do workshops. I've never tried making paper before. I don't even know what the process is about. But all of a sudden, after a weekend, I got to know what the process was about. And so there were quite a few of those things that they were not something that I envisioned that I would necessarily do forever. And as you say, that collaborative environment, sometimes actually working with somebody else on a piece or just being around a lot of other people as opposed to in the solitary environs of our studios.
Yes, I completely agree with that.
California Slam is coming up.
Yes.
This is the third one?
It happens every 2 years, so we started 6 years ago. This is the third California Sculpture Slam. The Central Coast Sculptors decided that we wanted to have a statewide show and not a local show. And, of course, none of us had ever done anything like this before. So the first year was really, it took us about 18 months to get to put it on. And we had a sort of a committee of about 9 people. And we were meeting all the time trying to figure out how to do this and how do you even approach something like this. So I was on that committee, and then the second time around, we knew enough that there only needed to be 2 co-chair people, and I was one of them. So we could just do the whole thing. We had it all down, and we had the help of Rhonda LeBrain. We have Rhonda to help us with the publicity, which is essential when you're trying to reach out of your community and you don't know how to do it. And Rhonda kind of brought in the social network aspect of things, and she runs our Facebook. She doesn't run our Facebook page, but she constantly posts things, and she mixes it up with other places. And each time it's gotten, we've gotten more entries, and I think the shows have gotten better. The first year we had Charles Arnoldi as a juror, and he picked 60 pieces, which was probably too many pieces for the space. It was a little crowded, and then we had Colleen Sturt, who chose 38 pieces, which was much more workable. And this time we have Bella Feldman, and she chose only 24 pieces. But I think they're larger scale pieces. Bella does a lot of large scale work, so therefore I think she relates to that. We also took a lot of restrictions off. We had started out with weight restrictions and size restrictions, and working with San Luis Obispo Museum of Art staff, we got them to take off some of those restrictions so that the only restriction now is can you get it in the door, and it can't be more high than the ceiling, you know. And so we may end up 1 year with just one big installation or something. But anyway, it's improved. This time we had entries from every part of the state of California, from all near all the borders, near Oregon, near Nevada, near Arizona, near Mexico, the whole state and everywhere in the middle, and little small towns that you hadn't even ever heard of, as well as all the metropolitan areas. So I think that we finally pulled this off completely. This time we really got the whole state involved. And we had 434 entries, and so this might discourage some people, but if you get into the show, it's a lot better for you and your portfolio. So I'm hoping that people appreciate that.
That's always been a challenge, having worked with Central Coast Craftmakers for years and for a while doing annual shows that were local and then, like you say, expanded and then last year did statewide for the first time. It is always, well, you know, why are we doing everything from out of the area when we or let's get more out of the area because we've seen everything here. So you get all of this dichotomy working back and forth.
Yes.
And I was quite impressed, too, with the geographical stretch that we were able to achieve. Stephen keeps making sure that Open Studios works and so forth. Have you ever been part of coordinating a major exhibit?
Mm-mm.
Just your own,
just
which is
own,
enough.
Yeah. No, I was actually chairman of the Open Studios Committee for 4 years, and that was enough. Now it's completely handled through the office, which is nice, because we don't have to sell catalogs or do any of the publicity types of things. But it was quite a bit of work back in the old days.
Well, and Lucy, you talk about, you know, how the learning curve of what it was to put it together. Can you, without going into a lot of detail, but just list maybe four or five of the things that you had to figure out, how do we do this? I mean, obviously getting the word out that you're even having a show is one of them, but...
Well, that's actually, from my point of view, our sculpture group's job was to get the entries in. At a certain point, we turned the actual curating of the show over to the museum. So we really, that is our job. And the first thing we had to do was, you know, write a call for entries and make sure that we covered all the bases and make sure that we got it printed, which I, you know how to get printing done. So that's not a problem. But we had to get somebody to design it. And our original sort of look was designed by Jack Bezek, who's now deceased, but we keep that look going. We had to figure out how much to charge for entries, what our budget would be, how much it would cost to put the whole show on. We pay our juror. We had to talk about prize money. We have $1,750 worth of prizes. I'd like to increase that prize money. Now that we're having fewer pieces in a show, I think the prizes should be larger. So anyway, but you know, we don't do this to raise funds. We do this for the artists. So what we're going to do this year, in addition to everything we've already done to get the word out and have a good base of entries for a juror to select from, we're going to do more in conjunction with, in addition to what San Luis Obispo Museum of Art staff does to promote the show. So we are now going to have some advertising in Arts Obispo's Open Studios catalog, for instance, and in Art Limited magazine. And we're also going to do some digital postcards and maybe printed postcards to supply to the artists and things like that. We're going to send the museum's press release out with particular information about the artists in a region to, like, the Bay Area and Oakland and L.A. and all those places the artists come from. And basically, we won't have any money left by the time we finish doing everything we want to do for the artists.
When those shows become self-supporting with the entry fees and then, as you say, juror cost, prizes, publicity, plus installation costs, I mean, sometimes it's, oh, we need 8 gallons of paint, or we need to make new pedestals, or we need more light cans, or whatever it is. So it's just there are all these costs that keep surfacing.
We will spend all the money that the entries brought in so that everything we can possibly do will be done to make the show a success and to get people to come and see it.
I think we've really just sort of scratched the surface a little bit on what it really takes to put one of those together, and having been on your side of it and on the sending stuff inside, sending stuff away side of the picture, it's amazing how much detail needs to be there.
I would say this, just in case anybody needs to hear it. If you're sending a three-dimensional piece in that has parts, you need to put instructions about how to set it up, and you need pictures of it, how it looks when it's done.
And I think that the more those statements get put into the final letter for those 20-some artists or whatever it is that have a piece in the show. When does the show open?
September 25th, and the awards will be given out on September 26th. We are not sure whether Bella will show up or not. We hope she will. I have to further communicate with her. We want everybody to come to the reception and see the awards and enjoy some snacks and wine and take a really good look at what's going on in sculpture in California.
Bella has been to the Central Coast a few different times. We had an exhibit of hers at Cal Poly many years ago, and then she came back and had an exhibit not too many years ago at the Art Museum, and Ears on Art interviewed her then. I hope that she will be able to make it because, as I say, this is not foreign turf to her. Her career has been at California College of Arts and Crafts, which is now California College of Art in Oakland, teaching sculpture for many years. And I guess now she's finally fully retired.
Oh, no.
No, she's still going strong?
She's still making pieces and showing pieces.
Oh, I know she was doing that.
She's not teaching anymore.
Yeah, that retired was only from the teaching part. No, I knew that she was still having fun in her studio. So,
exciting show. I know what's in it. It's a beautifully curated or chosen show by Bella. Everything, it doesn't have a theme, but it somehow comes together beautifully. And, Ruta at the museum agrees with me that it's going to be a very, very dynamite show.
We'll look forward to that. And have you got work in the gallery in the area or nearby?
I am represented by the Vault Gallery in Cambria. At this point, they've sold everything that I had ready to give them, and that's why I'm back at it, trying to produce some more work for her.
I just want to say thank you, and I'm really looking forward to the sculpture show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure.
I would like to thank our guest, Lucy Ryan, who is one of the organizers of the California Sculpture Slam, which opens at the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art on September 25th. For more information on the exhibit, visit sloma.org. Today we have a very special guest, and if you would please introduce yourself.
I'm Krissa Hewitt, co-host of this program.
And Krissa, you have an exhibition coming up at the Steinberg Gallery. Could you please tell us a little bit about it?
This is Krissa being a photographer, which surprises some people. This is an exhibit entitled Seen and Reseen, because I have invited two of the county's poet laureates, Marguerite Costigan and Glenna Lucia. And they have written poems in response to the imagery.
And so they had accessed these images first, and then they wrote the poems in reaction to what they viewed.
Correct.
And how many photographs are in the exhibit?
Too many. as many as 50, but I'll probably call it down some when we're actually hanging.
As I understand it, the exhibit opens on Art After Dark in October. Is that correct?
October 2nd. So it'll be 6 to 9, again, Art After Dark, and then it runs through the month of October, ends on Halloween on the 31st. So, and I believe Steinberg is open every day from 7 in the morning till 6 in the evening. Mm-hmm. So you can go have lunch, coffee, whatever excites you. We will have, on the Friday following the opening, will be an actual poetry reading at 7 o'clock. That'll be a chance to not just be able to read, but hear these two poets deliver their pieces. Basically, the show has two components. One is photographs from my several trips to Italy, the quarries, and the marble workers. And the other is just different things that I find fascinating, rust, patinas, odd angles of things from all over.
This will be a very, very exciting show.
I'm looking forward to it.
The Steinberg Gallery is located at 1531 Monterey Street, near the corner with California Boulevard. For more information, visit steinberggallery.com. I am Stephen DeLuque. You have just listened to a presentation of Ears on Art, produced at the listener-supported KCBX public radio station in San Luis Obispo, California. For co-host Krissa Hewitt, have a great afternoon.